dangerous killers of all are the ones you don't see coming.
Women are far more likely than men to get away with murder because they're rarely suspected.
This fortune teller sees a future of death.
Someone who was a seer or a prophet was someone you didn't want to mess with.
A high-flying lawyer has a lethal brief.
A conniving, backstabbing Miss Priss who thinks that she's entitled to anything in this world.
And a dear old aunt serves a cup of tea to die for.
She was one of the worst types of serial killers this country has ever known.
These deadly women are right behind you. But you'll never guess who. They're beyond suspicion. She claims to have a special gift.
She could foresee the future. That made people admire her, and she relished that.
They thought that she was possessed with some power of the occult and the beyond that made her this amazing prophet of doom.
Tilly Gaburek is special, but not in the way her customers think.
Tilly was on a killing spree. She was enjoying killing people.
An immigrant neighborhood in northwest Chicago, 1911.
Little Poland, the area where Tilly was a several square block area of pretty much just Polish people who were fairly fresh off the boat.
It was said that there were more Poles living here in Chicago at one point than there were in the entire city of Warsaw in Poland.
Like many in Little Poland, Tilly Gaburek lives a precarious existence.
I'm sorry, I'm so late. The market was so crowded, and there were so many people, and potatoes.
It's made
so
worse
excuses,
by an
excuses,
idle husband.
It's all you have. Did you bring my beer?
I didn't bring the beer. I had no money.
Husband was a drunk and was pretty lazy and really just didn't do much of anything. And so she ended up supporting them because he only worked every once in a while at odd jobs.
Useless woman.
Each year of Tilly's unhappy marriage is making her more bitter.
It was unkindly said about Tilly that she was greasy, complected, ill-mannered, just a thoroughly unpleasant kind of woman to look at. And she was made hard by the times that she lived in.
Why, Manny, you have no idea.
She's thinking of how to get out.
26 years of a tough marriage to a man that had caused her so much grief. And finally, I think something snapped within her.
One evening, after another long day at work,
it's about time you come on.
You are going to work. I'm sick of your work. You.
Tilly stands up for herself.
Me. Me. What are you doing?
Just down. You get taken. Get out. I'm sick of it. Take this.
She had spent her whole life being a downtrodden, beaten kind of person. And finally, now she had some power.
It took a long time for Tilly to stand up for herself, but when she did, she became a new person.
At age 55, Tilly wants a new life, a new look, and a new career.
After Tilly broke out of her shell, she had to construct a scenario where she looked like somebody important, that she had a talent no one else did.
That talent is predicting the future.
When you go into a dress shop and you order a black dress, obviously a mourning dress, and a shopkeeper asks, oh, I'm sorry, when did your husband die? This really changed her status in the neighborhood because someone who was a seer or a prophet was someone you didn't want to mess with.
Writer Troy Taylor says Tilly's self-proclaimed psychic powers gave her something she'd never had before. Respect.
Throughout her life, Tilly was just a plain, ordinary person who had no real claim to fame. It wasn't until she made these psychic predictions of who was going to die that she was really set apart from the rest of the crowd.
But Tilly's predictions are worthless unless she can make them come true.
Poisoning is a method women frequently use to dispatch their victims. It suited Tilly's personality because she could be in control, she could get close to her victim, she could decide when, where, and how they died.
Sit.
Tilly has given her husband of 26 years a lethal dose of arsenic.
What it does is it causes paresthesias. In other words, it causes damage to the nerves in the hands and in the feet. Headache, vomiting, a feeling of being ill with the flu. This is particularly distressing because once it starts, it doesn't go away. It's there day and night, day after day after day.
In the midst of murder, something unexpected happens. Tilly begins to enjoy it.
She had this very perverse, sadistic glee in watching the death throes, the agonizing death throes of her victims.
This sadistic glee is the catalyst for Tilly to begin another new career.
She was married to her first husband for 26 years before suddenly becoming an overnight serial killer.
We know it was at least 9, and the newspapers believed it could have been as high as 20.
A grieving widow, beyond suspicion. Tilly Gaburek has murdered her first husband.
$200,000, man.
Now she's cashing in.
Are you sure,
man? Yeah, that's fine. Just give me the money.
Okay.
He had an insurance policy, which at that time, in the late teens, that was a lot of money in a poor immigrant neighborhood like Little Poland.
I think Tilly's first murder was mostly out of convenience. She was tired of her husband, she didn't want him around, and it just so happened that she got $1,000 out of the deal. After that, she saw a way to make a living.
She barely waited until the ground and the earth had settled before she was marrying her next husband.
This husband dies too. And so does the next. Both deaths are predicted by Tilly, and both provide lucrative life insurance payouts.
Most of the Polish people who lived in the neighborhood were very, very religious people, and superstitious people. Nobody really was brave enough to go and tell the police that they thought there was something going on.
With each death, Tilly's reputation as a fortune teller grows. Dare to cross her, and you'll be the subject of a terrifying prophecy.
The future. There.
She would very often whisper in their ear, "You're going to die soon."
And apparently, all of her predictions were coming true. There was one young woman who did notice that Tilly had seen several men die in her home and was suspicious, and of course, then she died herself.
By this time, no one in the neighborhood is safe.
She also got into an argument with some parents of some three little children who also mysteriously died.
She even poisoned a neighbor's dog that was barking and causing her to lose sleep at night.
I think Tilly enjoyed the power that wielding life or death over another human being gave her. And she enjoyed it. It was one thing to kill a husband for his life insurance. It's completely different to kill someone that had angered her.
The suspicion nobody dares voice is the link between all the deaths. Tilly's famous stew.
Tilly was an accomplished cook. It was said that she could whip up a fabulous meal.
Perhaps that is what attracts her fourth and final husband, Joe Klimek,
who kind of strikes me as being a little clueless. I guess today we would say he was very laid back and didn't pay much attention to local gossip.
Joe doesn't realize the woman pretending to nurse him back to health is actually killing him.
It wasn't until his brother finally said, "You know, I think there's something wrong with you," that he realized that he was getting sick.
More soup?
And in fact, he never did anything. It was his brother who thought there was something suspicious going on after asking around the neighborhood and finding out that Tilly had already buried several other husbands.
And for every husband who eats a deadly serving of stew, there's an insurance policy for Tilly to collect on. When Joe Klimek's brother alerts the police, they're just in time to prevent Tilly claiming her final victim.
Joe was probably one bowl away from death of Tilly's stew. When the police showed up at their home on Winchester, it was simmering on the stove.
The bodies of Tilly's previous husbands are exhumed. They each contain enough arsenic to kill four people.
In the good old days, it was actually quite easy to get away with murder. In today's world, with modern forensics, with knowledge of heavy metal poisoning like arsenic, I would say that after one death, we would be on to her.
On trial for murder, Tilly Gaburek becomes a household name across America. Her transformation from an unknown working woman is complete.
She really seemed to enjoy the attention, and I think that was a big part of why she did what she did. she was in the spotlight, and she ended up with a life sentence in prison.
The woman who was so eager to predict a death won't admit to causing any. To this day, the exact number of Tilly Gaborik's victims is a mystery.
The number of dead that Tilly left in her wake is a pretty amazing number. We know it was at least 9, and the newspapers believed it could have been as high as 20. She does definitely rate up there as I would say, probably the deadliest woman in Chicago history.
They say opposites attract.
A 60-year-old, overweight, alcoholic, drug addict, beautiful, young, 30-year-old lawyer.
But it's not love that brought this couple together.
She always dated a man to get something out of him, be it a car, be it an apartment. She was investing in this relationship for some reason.
Hey!
And that was probably what? Murder.
When you talk about a human life, it's something to value.
Buck Clinton knows exactly what his son's life was worth. $5,000. That's how much two lawyers paid to have him killed.
It's sad to think that people get to the point that they do. I may not be a saint myself, but on the other hand, there's a limit of what people do, and there's certain lines that individuals just do not cross.
Buck's son, Buzz Clinton, did nothing to deserve death.
Uh-oh, the magic carpet's starting to lift off.
His only crime, to fall in love with single mom, Kim Carpenter, and play dad to her daughter, Rebecca.
Kim and Buzz were extremely happy. They were two people who understood each other. And they really fit together well, those two, right? And Buzz really loved Kim's child, Rebecca. Wanted to be a father figure for that child.
Is it heavy?
Because the child did not have a father.
And this father will be taken away too, in a bitter family feud. Kim Carpenter's parents dote on their granddaughter. Her sister Beth is also fiercely protective of her niece. But they all have a big problem with Buzz Clinton.
They hated him from day one. All the Carpenters hated him. Beth Carpenter, the mother, the father.
To the rest of the Carpenter family, Buzz isn't worthy of raising a daughter because of his past career as a male revue dancer.
They looked at Buzz as he was this kid who was a dancer. So whenever they met, there were fireworks, you know? They didn't get along.
This was a guy that was, in their opinion, a loser, who took off his clothes for money and let women stuff $20 bills in his jockstrap. And they couldn't stand it.
Writer M. William Phelps says Beth Carpenter was a single-minded woman.
There was just the one Beth. She was all business, whatever she did. Beth Carpenter, when she set out to get something she wanted, she got it.
Beth's latest achievement is a law degree and a job with a Connecticut attorney called Haman Klein.
In walks this beautiful, young, 30-year-old lawyer, fresh out of law school, and Haman invites her right in and says, "You want a job? I'll give you a job."
Beth has begun her professional career. And now begins a personal crusade. Her goal this time, to take custody of her niece, Rebecca.
She wanted the child, and she wanted to raise the child because she could do it better.
Stall custody case number 2064.
Never giving consideration to Kim.
Custody case of Rebecca Carpenter.
Beth Carpenter decided we're going to have to fight for custody of that child, and we're going to begin to show that Kim and Buzz are just not capable of raising that child.
The drawn-out custody case pits sister against sister in a vicious battle.
Beth began to just testify in court that, you know, Buzz is this, Buzz is that. Kim is this, Kim is that. Kim never comes home to take care of the child. What's going to be different now? And ultimately comes down to, what is the judge going to believe? And the judge sides with whom? Kim and Buzz.
For the first time in her life, Beth Carpenter doesn't get what she wants.
Beth and her parents believed that Kim and her husband, Buzz, were unfit parents. But apparently the court didn't see it that way. The court awarded custody of that child to her parents, to her own parents, to be with her mommy and daddy. And I think maybe Beth's a real sore loser.
She has taken the legal route, and it has failed her. Now, young attorney Beth Carpenter will take the law into her own hands.
This is her obsession now, taking this child away from her sister. This is her life's work. She needs to do this. She started it, she's gonna finish it. There's only one thing left to do in Beth's mind.
Yo, what is this?
And that is to get rid of the problem.
Beth Carpenter is leading a spiteful family feud.
I find no evidence whatsoever of any child abuse in this case. And
she's lost a legal battle against her sister for custody of her sister's child.
This case is dismissed.
But Beth Carpenter will not be denied.
You know, my opinion of Beth Carpenter is that she's nothing but a conniving, backstabbing Miss Priss who thinks that she's entitled to anything in this world without any ramifications.
Somewhere along the line, Beth seems to have developed the idea that she was God and could take someone's life if she felt it should be gone.
Beth Carpenter has a deadly plan in motion. Her kisses never come for free.
Beth was very skilled at manipulation and getting other people to do something that she didn't want to get her hands dirty doing herself.
Beth's boss, Haman Klein, thinks this is sex with no strings attached.
Amen.
Yeah.
But his lover has a favor to ask.
I need your help.
A big one.
Sure. He was like, if that's what you want, honey, I am in love with you. I'll do anything for you.
Say yes. Say it.
All right. She goes to Haman, hey, can you find me someone to get rid of this problem? And Haman says, absolutely. I'll go right to my cocaine dealer, Mark Dupre. So the deal is $1,000 up front and $4,000 on the back end.
Dupre bides his time until fate hands him the perfect opportunity.
Mark Dupre is looking through the paper one day, and he notices an ad in there for a tow truck for sale. And who is selling that tow truck? Buzz Clinton. And he decides, that's it. I'm gonna call him up and tell him I wanna buy his tow truck. So, Mark Dupre goes and for some reason picks up his son and brings him along. So they meet Buzz Clinton at a local hotel and Buzz is driving a car. And Mark says, where's it? Buzz says, I have to jump the tow truck, the battery's dead, follow me, and I'll take you to it right now. Mark says, great. And they're driving to go look at this tow truck. And Mark Dupre is in back of them, and Mark Dupre flashes his lights at Buzz to pull over. Buzz pulls over right on the connector, right on the exit ramp, pulls over. Mark Dupre pulls over in back of him. Buzz gets out of the car, leaves it running.
What are you doing? Hey, buddy, what's this all about?
He comes out and he says, what's going on? Mark Dupre walks up to him with a pistol. And drops him right there on the interstate.
That night, Buck Clinton gets a call from his daughter-in-law that breaks his heart.
About 20 after 7, or a little after, shortly after that, got a call from Kim that Buzz isn't home yet. And then we got another call shortly after that by Kim and saying Buzz still isn't home. A friend had stopped by and said that his car is on the side of the road and somebody had been shot.
Buzz Clinton dies at the scene. Within months, a tip-off to police connects Mark Dupre to the killing.
So that begins the domino effect. You have the trigger man, then you have the guy who hired the trigger man, and then you have the mastermind, and those dominoes begin to fall.
Mark Dupre tells all about his murder-for-hire deal with Haman Klein and Beth Carpenter. Beth denies it and blames her former boss and lover.
She begins to tell the police, Haman Klein was obsessed with me to the fact that I told him that I had a problem with Buzz Clinton, and he took it upon himself to have him killed. Well, they asked Haman Kleiman about that, and he tells a different story.
After testifying against Beth, Haman Klein is sentenced to 35 years in prison. Mark Dupre is jailed for 45 years. And the harshest sentence is reserved for Beth Carpenter. Life in prison with no parole.
I myself was happy and yet sorrow at the same time, because here you have an individual who was young, brilliant, as Beth was, a life ahead of her, and through emotion just made bad choices and now is spending her life in prison.
For a woman who was once a gifted young lawyer, the fall from grace is complete.
She has now joined the lowlife of society.
Beth Carpenter is in a prison right now, and she can look out her prison window and she can see the connector where Buzz Clinton was murdered from her prison cell.
It didn't take much for Beth to kill her sister's husband, who never did anything to Beth. How safe do you think you'd be if she was out there?
No poison is more potent than the one served by a trusted hand.
Well, she was a dear, caring, loving, beautiful grandmother.
She helped everyone. She looked after everyone.
Oh, good, I brought you some homemade goodies.
She'd bring cake and she'd bring biscuits and she'd bring food.
And she'd bring death.
She went and saw them at their homes. She sat beside them.
Ready for the tea?
And then gave them poison.
Do you need just a little bit more, otherwise you're dehydrated.
What sort of a person does that?
Sydney, Australia. A thriving metropolis. But in the late 1940s, there is a population boom of the four-legged kind.
It was not uncommon for rats to be in almost plague proportions from time to time.
In her small tenement home, Caroline Grills is fighting a losing battle.
She wasn't happy where they lived. There was a rat plague right throughout Sydney, and she hated it. She absolutely hated where she lived.
Crime writer Paul B. Kidd says Caroline was desperate to escape her squalid surroundings.
There was a way out of her dilemma. Her father had died 11 years earlier and left the family house to his second wife, not Carolyn's mother, the second wife, and given her life tenancy.
Caroline's stepmother has a lovely home in a wealthy suburb.
Let me help me, let me help you.
With not a rat in sight.
So she began visiting her and popping over with nice cake and some lovely other goodies she cooked in the oven. She's a very good cook.
I'll make the tea.
Caroline will eventually inherit the family home.
Over here, dear.
Oh.
The kettle's up here.
Over there. All right.
But her stepmother
just be over there in a minute.
Will have to die first.
Just here. Oh.
Back in her own squalid home, Caroline is left to dream of the house she thinks should be hers. Until the rats she so despises get her thinking.
People don't wake up one morning in their 50s and decide to kill unless they've been thinking about it. We find that with killers, they fantasize about killing down to the last detail over and over and over.
Soon, Caroline Grills finds any excuse to drop in on her stepmother for some cake and tea.
Dear old love, her stepmother, fell very, very ill. Her hair started to fall out. She couldn't see anymore. She was going blind.
Open up, because she's in here.
How long has she been with us?
Doctors can't explain the mystery illness.
She had anything unusual to eat?
No, just tea and cake, nothing.
One woman knows exactly what the cause is. Rat poison containing thallium.
Thallium is actually an element. It's located in the atomic table between mercury and lead.
It's a lethal substance, familiar to forensic pathologist Janice Amatuzio.
As a poison, Thallium is absolutely ideal. It is odorless, it is tasteless, and it's easy to dissolve in liquids.
Death from thallium poisoning can be quick, and if it is, that's merciful. If a less than lethal dose is given, their hair will fall out, nausea and vomiting will be unbearable, their limbs will be in terrible pain. It's a dreadful way to die.
The tragic death of her stepmother has a happy result for Caroline Grills.
She inherited the house from her stepmother when her stepmother had passed away from what was at the time an unexplained illness.
She has her dream home, and no one suspects what a dear old lady did to get it.
She was just an ordinary suburban mum to look at, and she was just one of those people that if she walked by, you wouldn't even notice her.
It had to be very exciting for Caroline to know that she was above suspicion.
She was a little old lady living a lie.
Caroline Grills has stumbled upon the perfect poison. And now, there's no stopping her.
She was one of the worst types of serial killers this country has ever known.
In Sydney, Australia, Caroline Grills enjoys afternoon tea with her relatives.
They'd have games of bridge and cups of tea and something to eat.
The polite surroundings give no clue to the awful truth. Delightful Aunt Carrie is a killer who can't be stopped.
Obviously, she'd got a taste for murder.
4 years ago, Caroline Grills inherited the family home when her stepmother mysteriously died. Since then, three more relatives have suffered unexplained deaths. In every case, she is right by their bedside.
Caroline's first murder was motivated out of convenience and greed. She wanted to be in the good house. After that, it appears that her murders were nothing more or less than thrill killings.
Evelyn Lundberg and her son-in-law, John Downey, have no idea that Evelyn is next on the hit list.
Nobody could understand how she could possibly have such a warm relationship with the members of her family and yet poison them.
Within days, Evelyn falls deathly ill.
Her hair started to fall out. She went blind. She had terrible, terrible pain in the limbs. Naturally, Carolyn Grills was there to tend for her and see to it that she had someone to be with her. But Mrs. Lundberg just deteriorated and got worse. It was not looking good.
Yeah, let me take that from
Caroline Grills is a killer beyond suspicion.
Now, can you go and put your feet up for a little while? And I'll make sure that everyone's all right, okay?
And it makes her feel invincible.
It wasn't for personal gain. It was for a mixture of being in control, having control of someone else's life, but also a sense of I'm the only one who knows what the real cause of this illness is. So there's a sense of power behind it.
her secret weapon is rat poison.
I think that it became the poison of choice for those who were minded to poison other people.
As John Downey's mother-in-law recovers in the hospital from her strange and sudden illness, he discovers it has struck someone else.
John's suspicions were aroused during the arrest and trial of one Gladys Fletcher, who had allegedly poisoned her husband, the local rat catcher. The symptoms were exactly the same as Evelyn's.
John suspects that Evelyn is also being slowly poisoned. But to prove it, he needs to catch Aunt Carrie in the act. Evelyn Lundberg will be the bait.
When Evelyn Lundberg was finally well enough to come home, the Downies made sure that Aunt Carrie was aware of it. Of course, she came to pay a visit with some lovely things to eat.
Tea was made for everybody. And John Downey saw her reach towards the front of her dress, towards the area where she had a pocket, and then pass her hand over the cup and then put her hand back to the pocket. He then poured the tea that he'd got from his mother-in-law into a glass jar. Which he eventually took to the police when he voiced his suspicions. And the tea in this glass jar was sent to an analyst by the police, who several weeks later discovered that it contained a very significant amount of thallium in it.
Convicted of three murders, Caroline Grills is sentenced to life. In prison, she gets a new nickname, Aunt Thally, after her poison of choice.
If Caroline hadn't been stopped, the body count would have been enormous. When she ran out of poor relatives, she probably would have started on the neighbors.
There was no monetary gain. There was no sexual gain. She simply enjoyed it.
These deadly women were hard to stop because nobody guessed. Tilly Gaborik was a serial murderer who thrived on power. Beth Carpenter thought she was above the law. And Caroline Grills quietly killed behind a nice cup of tea. The mission was murder in front of our eyes. They lived and they killed beyond suspicion.